afternoon, and we have Ben Shealy with us. He is running for solicitor for the 8th Circuit, which, of course, is our circuit right here. He was here with us back in May, June, before the primary. And how's it been going, Ben?
Well, you know, I kind of sat back a little bit while the primary was going on to see who would come out of that. And since the primary, I cranked it up. I think probably in July, end of July, I cranked it up. So doing a lot of meetings, going to a lot of events, putting out signs, trying to get out there and knock on doors. So it's been a great experience thus far, and I think it's going well.
Absolutely. Now, well, it better be, because it's coming up here. November 6th is not very far away.
It's not, and I think my wife is looking forward to that day.
I think a lot of us actually are looking forward to that day. It's been a long process, hasn't it?
It has.
So, now, Ben, I just want to ask you, because originally you started out as a Republican and you changed to a Democrat.
I did. I initially announced, I think it was in August of last year, as a Republican. This is my first foray into politics, and I said, well, gosh, let me announce as a Republican, you know, solicitor's Republican, that's who I'm going to face, and if we can face it off in the primary, then we can go there. As I went along, I said, well, you know, let me investigate this more. You know, I had a lot of Republican support out of several of the counties. Then I began to get some entreaties from a lot of your Democrats and asking if I wanted to run as a Democrat. And I said, well, you know, let me consider that. I have some Republican support. I've got Democrat support. I've never done this before. So let me go out and talk to people. And I talked to my supporters, both Republican and Democrat, and said, well, you know, what do you guys think? What kind of input? And across the board, all of them said, well, you know, it's really a nonpartisan office, Ben. It doesn't matter if you're running Republican or Democrat, we're going to support you either way. You know, I can't make policy. You know, I can't raise your taxes. I can't do anything like that. So for me to run as a Democrat, I had a great deal of support from, like I say, from people asking me that. And the Greenwood County Democratic Party has been wonderful to me. The Newberry Democratic Party, Abbeville, and Lawrence have all been so wonderful to me. They've welcomed me in with open arms and have helped me to kind of learn the ropes, because, you know, as a novice in this,
there's a lot of politics involved in this, though, isn't
there? There is a lot of politics involved in this all the way around. Yes, there is. But the people have been very, very helpful to me. You know, I think of Norval Davis and Elaine Gentry here in Greenwood, Jan Owens from over in Promised Land and her group. They've been so wonderful to me, you know.
Well, as a Democrat, usually Democrats are considered more liberal. Would that mean the solicitor's office would be more liberal?
Well, you know, I think you got to look at a Southern Democrat versus, you know, a Democrat from anywhere else. And I think the Southern Democrat is traditionally a conservative Democrat, and they don't necessarily follow the same tune as the National Party is laying down. And so I don't know that, no, it's not going to be that much liberal, because I consider myself conservative, you know, and I've heard, you know, Floyd Nicholson speak, I've heard Bob Merritt speak, and I'm in line certainly with their policies, and I think both of them have been, you know, Democrats for a long time. Floyd, having been the mayor of Greenwood,
sure.
You take Bob Merritt, having worked with Senator Drummond for, I think, 18 years.
Yeah. Yep.
So,
well, he said we had Bob on the show the other day. Mm-hmm. He said he has enjoyed being an independent.
Well, you know, I think being an independent absolves you of a lot of the politics, so to speak, because you can say, I'm not Republican or I'm not Democrat. I'm independent, so don't come hammer me with your policies about, you know, what you think's right, because I'm independent.
Yeah.
And so, you know,
I think this is true. We have gotten very partisan in our politics, and I think that's a shame, because we're not accomplishing stuff on the left or the right, because everybody is hunkered down with their position.
I think you're exactly right, and unfortunately, I think that's occurred probably over the last 20 years. I don't remember it being quite this vehement when I was younger, and it seems like nowadays that it's either, well, you're a Democrat, I'm not going to vote for you simply because you're a Democrat, or you're a Republican, I'm not going to vote for you simply because you're a Republican. I think you really... to be an informed decision maker, you got to look at the individuals who were on that ticket and look at their experience and make an informed decision. That being said, you know, I think we have a great slate of Democratic candidates here in not only Greenwood County, but throughout the circuit, running for different offices.
Sure. Now, if you had to describe yourself, when you become solicitor, how do you feel that you would run your office? This is just an opening discussion. What would you feel would be the important factors in the office?
I think the most important factor is probably to get back to the people. And by saying that, I mean we have to be open to our victims, to treat them with dignity and respect. I think a lot of the victims feel like they were not treated with dignity and respect, feel like their cases were handled without them knowing what was going on.
What would you do different than over what's been done? I mean, we have, I do believe, victim advocacy and this type of thing. What would you do that would make it different from this last solicitor?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and I think Solicitor Peace pointed out in his, while he was running the primary, that almost every assistant solicitor has about 600 cases.
Right.
Well, if I counted right, I think there's 17 attorneys in that office. There's only 3 victims advocates. Now, you do the math. You take 600 cases and multiply it by 17, and then you take 2 people that work in general sessions court and 1 that works down in juvenile court and figure out how many cases they have to handle. One of the things I would do is increase the number of victims advocates. I think we have to have a victim advocate for every county so that they can be more hands-on and they can be in touch with people and people know where they are at all times instead of, you know, having a victim's advocate that covers 2 counties where if I'm a victim in Lawrence, the victim advocate may be over in Newberry, and then I might not be able to get in touch with them. Same thing with Greenwood and Abbeville. So I think you need an individual person that you can go to. So I think that's one change that I would do to make victims maybe feel more respected, give them more attention.
I know one of the cases that was talked about, and I don't know the particulars of the case and everything, but that somebody was sentenced, received probation, whatever they received, and the victim was not advised of that before it came down, and they were very upset about that.
And yes, I know that we had, I think, Citizens for a Better Greenwood had a stump meeting, and I think I know at least one woman stood up there and said, listen, I never had a clue that my case was resolved. When I started my race, I talked to all the heads of the law enforcement agencies.
Mm-hmm.
Almost to a head, they said, listen, Ben, one of the biggest problems we got is our victims aren't being notified. And quite frankly, a lot of times we're not being notified of when our cases are being disposed of. So the victims are coming to us, and we're saying, well, let me check on it. And then we go check, and we find out it's been either dismissed or it's been pled out, and we were never informed, and the victim was never informed, and they're not happy. And we got to make those folks happy. I often tell the groups I talk to, the 2 groups that we need to make happy the most are the law enforcement and the victims. And if we please those 2 groups, those are the people that have the involvement in the criminal justice system in the 8th Circuit. Now, having said that, we also need to look at our defendants and try to figure out what got you here. Is there some way we can make our system better that we don't see you again? Because,
does that mean putting them away forever so you don't see them again?
Well, there's some I call them problem children.
Right.
Those are repeat offenders. And then you have your violent offenders. Those folks cannot conform themselves to the morals of our community. And we got to throw them away, you know, and throw the key away. But our other folks that are in here maybe for the first time, they may be in there for the second time. We got to look at them and figure out what brought them here. One of the biggest best examples I use, is a case I had where a young man, I will call him a serial burglar, and he kept on committing burglars. I kept on seeing him, and finally, you know, we sent him down the road for a good while. And about a month after we sent him down the road, one of his good friends came in, not related to a crime or anything, just happened to be in the courthouse. And I didn't know he was a friend of the guy until he said something, said the guy's name, and so I went over and I said, well, let me talk to you about him. I said, he came up here a lot. What's his deal? What's his problem? Because he would never talk to me. The defendant would never talk to me. And the guy looked and said, Mr. Shealy, his mother and father are dead, and he doesn't know how to eat. you know, he was not really old enough to, I guess, catch on to the DSS system or the social services that could be provided for him. So he broke into people's homes so he could eat. And, you know, I look at that guy and I say, well, here's a person that if we'd have known that, we could have
made a better decision.
You know, we could have redirected this individual. We wouldn't have the victims. People would not have lost property that they hold dear. And this young man would not have been incarcerated for a number of years. And those are the kind of people we got to catch before they get incarcerated for a number of years. And that helps our community all the way around.
And they become part of the system for a long time. And we end up paying the price because they are in the system for a long time.
You know, it increases our taxes because we got to keep them in the system. Whereas if they can become productive members of our community, they're paying taxes. And I don't have to see their smiling or frowning face in the courtroom again.
Absolutely.
And we don't have nearly the number of victims that we had. So, you know, that's you have to approach it in a holistic sense where we're looking at, you know, every part of the system and trying to figure out.
Well, one of my questions would be, though, Ben, how do you do that when you have so many cases? I mean, you talk about attorneys having 600 cases mm-hmm. a year. I mean, how do you look at this based on the number of cases that are out there?
Well, I think that's where you have to sit down with law enforcement and say, guys, tell us where your problem children are. Let's get those folks taken care of. Let's get them out of our system. Let's get them down into Columbia or wherever, you know, they're incarcerated. And when we get those folks out of the system for a number of years, you'd be surprised at the number of crimes those just one individual may commit. I talked to Chief Brooks months and months ago, and one concern he had was they'd arrested a guy in 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, and I think 2011, and these were fairly serious crimes. Well, you know, if we'd taken him off the street in 2006, you know, you don't have 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 to worry about.
Sure.
So those are crimes that, you know, we get those folks that commit a large number of crimes and we send them down to Columbia, well, then we can concentrate better on the folks that we can either work with and get them out of our system totally because they're, you know, there are ways we can handle them better, or we just, you know, have to, I don't want to say beat down everybody because we can't do that.
Right.
Law enforcement knows we can't do that, and I've talked to a number of law enforcement officers. But once we get rid of that, you know, 20% of the criminals that's committing 50% of the crime,
sure.
Guess what? Our docket shrinks, and we just progress from there. And we keep getting rid of the problem children because some of those ones that we think we can help, we're not going to be able to help, and they become problem children. We say, fine, you know, you've demonstrated to us that you cannot be a part of our community the way we want to live because really everybody wants to just be safe. They want to be able, they want to be able to eat. They want to be able to provide for their family. They want to feel safe on the streets, and that's what I want for our community. I want our community to feel safe.
Absolutely. We're here with Ben Shealy. He is running for solicitor of the 8th Circuit. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. If you've got a question or a comment for Ben, just give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be right back. Don't you go away.
The weekend comes, my cycle hums, ready to race to you.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Back here at Sharp Passes Gallery, and again, if you have a question for Ben Shealy, he is running for solicitor for the 8th District or 8th Circuit, which is Greenwood, Abbeville, Newberry, and Lawrence. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And of course, you are an attorney. You have a private practice in Newberry, correct?
I do. My partner and I, Mindy Zimmerman, started our practice about 4 years ago when both of us left the solicitor's office.
You actually worked in Jerry Peace's solicitor, right?
I sure did. I worked under Towns Jones years ago, and actually Jerry was a deputy solicitor, and I worked under him as a deputy solicitor, and then Jerry became solicitor, and I worked for Jerry. I also worked in the upper part of the state with Bob Ariel when he was a solicitor in the 13th Circuit. But Mindy was a drug prosecutor, and that's what she did for, I think, her entire time with the solicitor's office. And we decided to go out on our own and set up shop in Newberry. Both offices were very comfortable with Newberry, and we have been really extremely blessed in Newberry. And we've had a little over 4 years now that we've been there, and we've done very well, and it's really a wonderful experience.
So I might ask you, why did you decide to run for solicitor? I mean, if I remember correctly, you have four young children.
I do.
Why did you decide to run for solicitor? I mean, this is going to be an all-in job now.
It is, but since the time I wanted to be a lawyer, I wanted to be a prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a deep yearning within, I don't say within my being. I mean, I know that sounds kind of trite, but that's really what I always wanted to do as an attorney. I've spent most of my practice, 11 out of the 17 years, and I'm getting ready to go on my 18th year, in the Eighth Circuit. And I have a love for the Eighth Circuit that is, I don't want to say it's unbounding,
mm-hmm.
but Newberry has been very good to me professionally, as well as, you know, a home place where, you know, my parents lived for 23 years before they moved. I live in their house now. And
did you move your family down? What did y'all do?
I am down there,
right,
to be in the circuit. We didn't want to move the children twice,
mm-hmm.
Because, you know, in
your wife
the
is
horrible,
a pastor,
horrible,
right?
She is. She's a Lutheran minister. In the horrible event that I would lose the race.
That you don't believe.
That's right. I think I will win this race. But if I do in fact lose, we'll probably move the children into the Prosperity area of Newberry County. If we win the election, successful, we'll probably move into the 96 area of Greenwood County. And we didn't feel that it was beneficial to the children to have them move twice. It's such a, formative time of their lives.
How old are your kids?
I have one that's 8, one that's 6, one that's 3, and one that's 10 months.
Last time you were here, he was 6 months.
Yeah.
So time is moving.
It is, and, you know, he's on the edge of walking now, and it's a very exciting time around our house because the other three children just love watching him, love playing with him. And yesterday they spent time at the state fair and at the Columbia Zoo because they were actually out of school. So they got to do some amazing things, and apparently they got to ride the elephants, which I didn't realize you could do, but apparently at the...
So are you jealous?
No, I'm not. I don't know that I've ever wanted to ride an elephant. And, you know, I teased my oldest son because, you know, he got up to the elephant and apparently told his mom that, you know, this is not for me, Mom. I'm not riding that elephant. And I look at it, and I probably would have said the same thing. You know, that's a big animal.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to get on that. But he rode the camel instead. So.
Well, there you go.
But his sisters were very excited. They got to ride the elephant. And they had a wonderful day. But you got into it
because
right.
you...
Yeah, I mean, I just love it. I love the community, and I love prosecuting every aspect of it. And, you know, that's where I feel, and I hate to use this term, but I feel a calling to be a prosecutor. And I hate to use that term because I've always associated a calling with the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have 11 generations of Lutheran pastors in my family. You know, I have an uncle who's a Lutheran pastor, a cousin. My wife's a Lutheran minister. So I associate that term with the ministry, a calling into the ministry. And I was reminded last week that, you know, you have callings for a variety of different areas. And I certainly don't think I have the demeanor of a minister. And I really, really, you know, love being an attorney. I love, you know, the criminal court. I love the prosecution side of criminal court. And I love the Eighth Circuit.
And how is it working on the other side here? Is you're defending criminals here in private practice, or is that what you're doing in private practice?
Well, our private practice, you know, being criminal lawyers, that's an extension. We do mostly appointed cases because typically you don't have a whole lot of people that can afford really private defense attorneys anymore.
Sure.
So we do a lot of appointed cases. We have appointed cases here in Greenwood and Abbeville and Lawrence. Everywhere in the circuit, Newberry,
sure.
And and we have appointed cases, you know, outside the circuit. But as an attorney, we're called to zealously represent our client, and we do that. Mindy and I and the other attorneys in the office, we take that seriously, our ethical obligations to represent our clients to the best of our ability. And if we didn't do that, we wouldn't, well, number one, we wouldn't be fair to the system.
Sure.
We wouldn't be fair to the community. We wouldn't be fair to our client, and we wouldn't be fair to ourselves. So we take that very seriously. And, you know, I think when we work on our cases, most of the time we can resolve our cases, I don't want to say without going to trial, because if we have to go to trial, we're more than happy to go to trial. But we normally can sit down with the assistant solicitors and law enforcement and say, you know, here's the case, here are the problems we see with your case. What do y'all think? And
do you think you should do that? Do you think you should do that? I understand your opponent believes that we should slam the book when we have a case. Should we work out a plea deal?
Well, if we don't work out plea deals, let me tell you what, that system is going to implode upon itself. Yeah, when I first became a solicitor years ago, I said, well, gosh, we just, you know, if we've got a great case, we've just got to slam the door shut mm-hmm. on these people, and we got to send them down the road.
I guess that was early on in your career.
That was, and old circuit court judge Rodney Peoples, who's now retired, he said, you always, as the state, you negotiate from a position of strength.
Right.
And he recognized that you may have a slam dunk case, which never exists, I'm going to tell you that, as a prosecutor, that just doesn't happen. You may have one of the best cases you think you have ever seen in your life. And if that's the case, then you negotiate from a position of strength. And you get the best sentence that you can for the state. Because that's, you know, as a prosecutor, you're zealously representing the state and the community. And so, yes,
does
you're...
Does that mean you have to go to court?
No. I mean, you have to go to court to put the plea on record.
Right.
But when you have a very strong case, the criminal defendant knows it. The defense attorney knows it. And it doesn't serve any purpose for them to say, okay, you know, my sentence, the maximum I could possibly get is 15 years, but you're offering me 12. So I'm not going to take that. I'm going to roll the dice and see what I can get. And, you know, they go to court and your case is as good as you think it is, and they get 15 years. You know, and I think you have to give a defendant sometimes credit for coming forward and saying, hey, yes, I did this. This is a crime that I will admit to. And you have to give them a little bit of credit for that, for admitting that. I mean, the federal system certainly does. They
sure.
They used to have sentencing guidelines, and one of the things where you get a downward deviation is when you admit your crime and you come in and plead, they'll give you a downward deviation. And when they do that, it saves you tax dollars. It saves
sure.
court time.
Sure.
It allows you to move cases like you need to move.
What about it, though, as far as the law enforcement saying we want this one to, you know, go to trial? What, you know, that sometimes I know law enforcement here in our area feels that they're not getting enough of a slam to put that person away or whatever.
Well, I think that's why we have to work hand-in-hand with law enforcement. We stand with them, and I know in all our counties we try to go, at least when I prosecuted, we try to go to the law enforcement and say, what are you guys looking for on this individual person? And oftentimes, law enforcement becomes frustrated because they've seen this guy all the time committing the crimes, and they're like,
sure.
you know, Ben, we know this guy's committing crimes. We know, and I know, and I know. And I said, you know, I understand that you know when you know when you know, but this is the first time you've got him into court. I can't give him 20 years because
you know
he's done that. You think he's done it before, and we've never been able to catch him. I can come in. I mean, I could put him in front of a judge straight up, and the judge is not going to give anybody 20 years on a first-time offense unless it's a very heinous offense.
Sure.
You know, then you're going to get the book thrown at you. And I think we have certain offenses that require you get the book thrown at you. But working with law enforcement and standing hand in hand with them, I think you can come to an understanding and. They can come to an understanding where you are, and you can come to an understanding where they are, and you can get appropriate sentences for these folks.
Do you think there's been a lack of communication between law enforcement and the solicitor's office here?
I think there has been in certain counties. a lack of communication with law enforcement. And I don't know what that reason is. I think that sometimes law enforcement doesn't think you're giving them a fair shake as far as maybe who they get as attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know one complaint years ago when I went to Abbeville as the deputy solicitor was, listen, they send us brand new solicitors all the time. And because we get brand new solicitors, you know, we're not getting good sentences and we're not getting good trials.
We don't get any working relationship
there.
Right. Yeah.
And luckily, you know, I was lucky enough to come over there, you know, and I'd had many, many years as a solicitor. And we had a young man come into our office, Austin McDaniel, who came over to that office. And Austin, being new, wanted the challenge, and Austin was up to the challenge and did an excellent job, had an excellent relationship with law enforcement over in Abbeville County. And we also had other prosecutors at the same time that were, you know, seasoned prosecutors. And we, Austin and I, we were over there solely all the time. You know,
right.
The other prosecutors switched counties between Abbeville and Greenwood. And by the time Austin and I left, I think we had a wonderful working relationship with the sheriff's office and the Abbeville City Police Department. And we kind of understood each other. And, you know, we may not have agreed every time
mm-hmm.
that a sentence went up, but we certainly understood each other, and we understood where everybody was coming from. And I think it worked very well at the time. And I think as long as you have that relationship and you can work with them, you're okay. And I think sometimes that was lacking. But there are times where I don't know that you can prevent some of those things.
Absolutely. Well, we are here with Ben Shealy. We've had a couple of questions come in. Hey, do you have a question? One of the questions about victims' advocate. Another one, as a theft victim, how they felt about everything. So when we come back, we're going to talk about some of these, and we're going to talk about some of the differences between Ben Shealy and his opponent. So I certainly hope you'll stay right here. Hey, you got a question for Ben? Give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. Pick up that phone. He wants your question. We'll be right back.
This is Philip Biffle, your Greenwood Edward Jones Financial Advisor. Do you have a recovery plan for your investments? If not, there are several reasons we think you should. While interest rates are very low, certain income strategies and investments could help increase your investment income. Also, many investment portfolios are out of balance at a time when proper investment diversification may be most critical. You also may want to review your portfolio to consider replacing lower quality investments with higher quality investments that may be at attractive prices. No one can control what the market will do next. You can, however, take advantage of investment opportunities that exist today. At the same time, it is important to be well positioned for whatever the market does tomorrow. Please call me, Philip Biffle, or stop by my office today to develop your personalized recovery plan investment strategy. Please call me, Philip Biffle, at 229-0444, or stop by my office today to develop your personalized recovery plan investment strategy. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
Right back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. Gosh, we got questions coming in. Time is running short, 4:41 in the afternoon. If you have a question for Ben, don't hesitate to give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. Let's go through some of the questions that we've had. They are very good. Well, one of our call-ins earlier in the show when we were talking about you wanted to add more victims advocates, said that Betty said that the victim's advocate was very sensitive, but also came across as very harried. And with the number of cases?
Well, exactly. I mean, that's why I say we have to add more of those, because they are very harried when they're dealing with that number of cases. And, you know, in certain offices, you may, during a court term, have five attorneys coming to you saying, can you please contact this victim? Can you please contact that victim? And all of a sudden, you know, he or she is working on a place, and all of a sudden they're asked to contact five different victims, and they're trying to do that, and they're trying to coordinate schedules to make sure that the victim can get time off to be in court for the plea to set up right. And so they are very harried. You know, I know that our victims' advocates that are in the office right now, Ken Wiltshire, who handles Newberry and Lawrence, and we had Angie Castillo, who was in the office, and she handled Greenwood and Abbeville. Now, Angie has since left the office just because, you know, her family was moving in a different direction, I think.
That's a loss for the solicitor's office. I know Angie.
Angie's wonderful, was wonderful with the solicitor's office. And then we have Julie Bledsoe down in the juvenile area. And they are all very caring people, you know, and they try their best to serve everybody. And I know that I can speak for Ken personally. When I was in the office, Angie was not a victim's advocate. She moved in that position after I left. But I don't think I've ever seen anybody in my life get more frustrated when a plea goes up and the victim is not there than Ken. I think it upsets him greatly when that happens. And he puts in, you know, 100%. And like I say, he is harried. And so I understand what Betty's saying when she says, yeah, I'm dealing with a guy and he's doing a good job, but he's awfully harried, or she is awfully harried.
Well, and the other problem is that victim's advocate makes that telephone call, doesn't get him that time, has to move on to the next case, and then tries to get back to it, and
right.
It's hard to connect. So you
right.
need somebody that has that flexibility and that time mm-hmm. to make those telephone calls.
Right.
Exactly.
And you have to, that's another job where you have to have a real people person that can talk to people and enjoys doing that. And
talk to all types of people.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
Yep.
Yep. Exactly.
All right. Well, there you go, Betty. He agrees with you on that one. Brian Clark says that he was a theft victim. The Peace, meaning Jerry Peace's office, was very helpful, professional, and best of all, was considerate of his time. So he appreciated what they did in the office for him.
Well, that, you know, it's very important to be considerate of people's time. You know, I have seen cases where we're going to put this up for a plea, and then it doesn't happen. And then we're going to put this up for a plea, and then it doesn't happen. And then we're going to put this up for a plea, and it doesn't happen. And finally, the fourth time, it gets up there. And by that time, the victim is so upset. At this point, not at the defendant.
Right.
But they're upset with the solicitor's office because they've been up there four times. And sometimes, you know, it can be helped. Sometimes it can't be helped because, you know, the judge may have to be somewhere and he shuts down court. Or, you know, you may just have a number of pleas that day and we're not able to get that one in. But we have to make a concentrated effort and a concerted effort to make sure that victims are treated with dignity and respect. And everything we do for them, you know, we look at their time schedule and when they can be there and we plan it out. Far enough in advance that everything works out, and you only have to come to court maybe one time. I know a lot of victims, you know, we have bond reduction hearings, and a lot of victims like to be there, be present for bond reduction hearings. Some don't care to be there. They just want to be there for the plea. Now, you know, if you have cases where you have numerous defendants, numerous bond reduction hearings, and the victim wants to be there for everything, well,
they're going to spend a lot of time.
Unfortunately, they're going to spend a lot of time, and they're going to get to know the inside of the courtrooms very well simply just being up there. But, yeah, we got to work on that.
I happen to have the opportunity to go as a juror to court here very recently with Judge Addy. And he said one of the things that he wished would happen is that more people would come to court and see what happens in court. You know, and I was thinking about that. And back in the day, people did spend the time going to court. It was a big thing to go to court and see the cases. And now I guess we're jaded by TV and all the other elements out there.
We really are. When I first started practicing, first started with Frank Partridge, who's an attorney down in Newberry. And Frank's father, you know, he would tell me the times his dad would go to the courtroom because that was the entertainment, you know. And he and the group of men, the retired men that he spent, you know, the mornings with, you know, during court week, they were like, great, let's go over to the courthouse and let's watch these trials. Let's see what's going on.
Exactly.
And, you know, it was kind of, I guess, their reality TV of the day. And we don't have many people that come into the courtroom just to view nowadays. It'd mainly be high school kids that are there for a class or some requirement
sure.
that they have to be there.
I just thought that was very interesting how that was a very popular thing to do,
and
now it has dropped off.
Yeah.
We also had another call from Lakita Thompson. She says, please do not try to be too harshest or project that. To be the harshest or to project that. Show us solutions, not just ideals. Could you involve Gleams and United Ministry in part of your packages?
Well, I think you have to involve the entire community. That's what I was talking about. We have to they get these problem children, and maybe that's not the best term to use, but these repeat offenders and these serious offenders, we have to move them out of the way and get them in the court, you know, excuse me, in the penitentiaries, so we can focus on those folks that need maybe our help, and we can divert them out of our system into a better way, so that I don't have to see them again, and so we don't have to lose a productive member of our society. You know, I'm open, you know, if I'm elected, I'm open to all ideas to how we can serve our community better, how we can help, you know, our youngsters come through some of the problems they have to a better life, to a productive member of society, because it really only helps the whole community all the way around.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that has been instigated here has been a drug court. Would drug court be something that you would want to continue?
I think drug court is something we have to expand. Right now, the way it's set up, I don't think we're reaching all the people we can possibly reach.
It's a cost problem, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think right now we have it kind of restricted to Greenwood County, and drug court to be effective to meet those classes and for the individuals to get there on time, there are very, very harsh requirements. And when I say that, I'm not trying to say they're too tough, but you have an individual and say, you have to be here every night at 6 o'clock for class, and if you miss one class, well, you fail drug court, and then we're going to send you to prison. If you only have drug court in Greenwood County, those folks in Lawrence and Newberry County really can't make that requirement. So if we're going to have drug court and we're going to make it effective, we have to make sure that it's expanded enough to reach those folks in Newberry and Lawrence County. We have to, I don't want to say make it cost effective, because I think it is cost effective if we're able to get those people out of the system to solve some of their addiction problems. I saw it work up in Greenville. Greenville had the program probably for about 2 years before I left that solicitor's office. And it's amazing to watch the people when they graduate from drug court. It's almost a relief and an excitement that they've finally broken this cycle. And that's really what we have to do. And if we can expand that and make it work properly, yeah, I'm all for drug court working properly.
Now, what about the check program, the bad check program?
Well, I've had people tell me that they love that bad check program because, you know, it gets them their money back quickly and they don't have to worry about it anymore. And I've heard people tell me that bad check program is ridiculous. When I ask the people why they think it's ridiculous, they say, well, you know, if you have a $10 bad check and there's a fee of $135, you know, that's really not equitable to do. You know, if I had a $10 bad check and I had to pay you $10 as a fee, you know, it might be okay.
Well, isn't the state fee $25 or $35 for a bad check?
Well, those are for banks. You know, that's what the banks set. Now, you have a statutory fee, and I'm pretty sure the statutory fee is $125 on the check.
Okay.
So it almost says if you're going to write a bad check, make it, you know, for $250 or $300 to make it worthwhile. And that's, we have to look at that. We have to see if that can be streamlined and fixed. I also talked with an attorney recently. He said, well, I see a problem in the fact that if the person doesn't come in and pick up the bad check and make it good, well, then you have an employee of the solicitor's office doing the warrant, and then the solicitor's office is prosecuting the case. Therefore, don't you have a conflict of interest when it's actually your office signing the warrant and your office prosecuting? I'd never really thought about that, but, you know, if you think about it a lot, you know, that possibly is a conflict of interest for the solicitor's office to be the ones that are issuing the warrants, or not issuing the warrants, but seeking the warrants and then prosecuting the case. It's kind of like a defendant or a victim, excuse me, you know, seeking the warrant, prosecuting his own case, and being the only witness. You know, kind of getting a conundrum there.
That looks like a little bit of a problem.
I agree with you. Yeah.
What do you think, part of course, what everybody is always interested in anymore, and part of the thing that we're missing a lot of is money to run an office. You know, I know that with 600 cases per attorney, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We would love to, of course, not have to have them work so hard and everything. But how do you feel that the budget is based on what you're working with?
I think the budget is probably adequate for what we need to do for the jobs we have to do. I think we have to look at the salaries and some of, I don't say perks, but right now I think the solicitor's office has six cars that are with the solicitor's office. Every attorney in the office has a state-issued cell phone. Those are ways to, you know, to cut back to save money. We've got to look at the salaries, too, to see if those really fall in line with everybody around the state. In the year, in the fiscal year 2008-2009, the total funding from all sources for the solicitor's office was about $1.9 million. It's a little more than that. For fiscal year 2009-2010, again, it was $1.98 million. And then for 2010-2011, it was a little over $2 million. So you look at those numbers, and those are big numbers to a lot of people. And they say, you know, gosh, is that an effective use of my tax dollars? And I said to them, well, we have to look at that, and we have to see if we are, in fact, using your tax dollars wisely. And we have to make an effort to make sure that that the tax dollars are used correctly and wisely and efficiently. And if we need to make some cuts in the office, and I'm not saying cuts in personnel, but, you know, cuts in equipment such as cars, such as cell phones, things like that, then we need to address those problems. Well, you know, got to have lights unless, you know, we go to a totally glass office, and I don't know that would work real well.
There are lots of issues, and everybody is looking at tightening belts and seeing where they can cut. But now, Ben, you know, you and your opponent, what would you say is the biggest differences? We're at 4:55 this evening. What would you say are some of the biggest differences between you and your opponent as this election comes to a close?
Well, I think the biggest difference, quite honestly, Ann, is experience. I've been an attorney 17 years, going on 18 years.
And what about your opponent?
My opponent will be an attorney starting his, I think, ninth year in November. In that time, he's worked in the Attorney General's office and also down in the 11th Circuit for Donnie Myers.
Attorney General's office, that should have been a big...
Well, if you look at what he did in the Attorney General's office, one of them was in the opinion section.
What does that mean?
That means he wrote opinions for the Attorney General and researched. Another time, he worked for the Internet crimes, sexual crimes, and then the sexually violent predators. Now, these are crimes where the Internet crimes, is you're truly prosecuting, but they're cases which, you know, I don't want to say about as slam dunk as you can get, but you look at
They're stacked
on the state side where, you know, you have an officer working from a location, and he's normally got a webcam, and he's got that person's face on the webcam, and he can track down the conversation, and sometimes, unfortunately, you know, other things with that webcam. And so those are pretty easy cases to win. The sexually violent predator cases, now those aren't even criminal cases. Those are civil cases where somebody has served their time in prison, and they come out of prison, and the court system or the prison system says, well, gosh, I don't know if this person's safe to go back on the street. And there's a special set of rules for sexually violent predator cases where really you only have to have one witness, and the evidentiary rules that apply in other civil cases don't apply. There's hearsay that is allowed. Evidence that would normally not be allowed in gets allowed in. And really,
that's what he dealt with?
Well, I think that's on his resume, if you look. And those cases, again, are cases that are, you know, almost impossible to lose. So if you look at his history really as a prosecutor, you're looking at about 3.5 years out of his eight almost, you know, starting his ninth year.
And then he worked for Donnie Myers.
Well, that's where he got his 3.5 years as prosecuting, you know. And I know he's indicated he had 90% conviction rate. Those numbers are incredible to me. I don't know that you could get to 90% unless you throw in the sexually violent predator cases he took, which are, again, civil cases. They're not criminal convictions, and they're slam dunk cases because those are weeded through a system, through a sexually violent predator board. So by the time you get to them, they're the cream of the crop as far as trying to keep the people locked up after they've served all their sentences. you know, like I say, you know, I, 9 years as a prosecutor. I prosecuted in every county in this circuit. In Greenwood, very little. I think I prosecuted maybe one or two cases in Greenwood. And up in the 13th Circuit, which is Greenville and Pickens. So my prosecution experience is, you know, far and above his prosecuting experience. I know the circuit much better. Out of my entire practice, I've spent 11 years practicing in the circuit. You know, I know every county very well. I know the judges well. I know juries. And when I say I know juries, it's really, people say, what do you mean you know juries? Well, you soon realize as a prosecutor that certain juries in certain counties are not going to convict on certain cases. Regardless of how strong your case is, they look at it and say, well, you know, I don't care. If that person hadn't been doing that, he wouldn't have gotten in trouble. A good example is oftentimes we have two counties that if you've been drinking and, you know, you get beat up through no fault of your own, well, then you say, well, you shouldn't have been out drinking. So it doesn't matter how good your case is on that. Those juries are 9 times out of 10 going to come back and say, well, the guy shouldn't have been drinking. If he wasn't drinking, he wouldn't have gotten in trouble. And so, you know, he kind of got what he deserved, which is, you know, legally not how it lines up, but that's what those juries think. So I know those nuances of the juries that David does not know. I mean, he's really never practiced in the 8th Circuit except for a smattering of cases that he would come up here and handle for the Attorney General. So overall, I mean, it just boils down to my experience with the not only with the circuit, but as a prosecutor. And I think that's what you're looking for in a solicitor, not I don't say a brand new prosecutor. You're also looking for a person who supervised people and can deal with people over the years. I've served in the United States Army where I supervised anywhere from small as 6 people all the way up to over 100 people.
This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Go ahead, go ahead. You can continue. I just have to say that. Go ahead.
And, you know, I have experience in dealing with people. Right now, we have a small firm in Newberry that my partner and I run. So that's a very, you know, one-on-one relationship with all our employees. And so you have to have that experience in dealing with employees at all levels and in all different situations.
How would you approach the office coming into the office? I mean, we already have lawyers on hand that are working there. How would you approach the office?
Well, you know, we've lost 4 attorneys. I think Solicitor Peace told me. I thought it was more. I thought they'd actually lost more than that. But they've lost 4 attorneys. Some of them say they're going anyway, regardless of, you know, who wins the election, because they don't want to serve under another solicitor.
And you can understand that.
Yes, certainly, yes. Certainly. You don't want to switch to a new system when you've understood the system and you're used to that system. But I think we have to give everybody an opportunity to do their job. If I'm coming in there, we're going to say to the people, look, I'm going to give you 3 to 6 months to show me that you can do your job, and if you can't do it, then I'm going to have to show you the door. If you can do it, well, then good, let's go. Let's move ahead. In these tough economic times, I don't think you can just come in and dump people out on the street and say, great, it was nice for you to work for the solicitor's office and for Greenwood County for all these years, but, you know, have a nice time trying to find a new job. I mean, that borders on cruel, I'm not a cruel person, and I don't believe that we have to do that to people. I think that, you know, as a solicitor, you set the tone for the office, and as long as you come down and you tell your employees this is the path that we are following, they're expected to fall in line. They may not agree with the way you want to approach things, and if they don't agree, you know, they're free to leave.
Sure.
But that's the way it is. You know, I think you're considerate of everyone. You're considerate of your employees. But in order to make sure that the community and the circuit is served well, you have to make sure that they're doing their job, that they're getting paid for. Because it doesn't do you any good justice to have an employee up there that you're paying, you know, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, and they're not doing their job.
Absolutely.
So, you know, those people, you know, if they don't want to conform, then it's been a pleasure letting you serve the community, but, you know, hopefully better luck somewhere else.
Absolutely.
Right.
All right. Well, we have been talking with Ben Shealy here. I will give you 1 minute just to wrap it up. What would you like the people to know? We've kind of talked over, but I'll give you 1 minute. Wrap it up here, Ben.
Well, the biggest thing that I'd like the people to know that is, you know, I am passionate to serve the 8th Circuit. You know, I love prosecuting. and I certainly would love to have their vote on November 6th. I enjoy the 8th Circuit and part of this politicking that I wasn't real sure that I would like, because I'm, to some extent, an introvert, but it's to meeting people, and it's been glorious to meet all the people within the 8th Circuit and individual, and hearing their needs and hearing their problems and trying to understand what they want fixed. I think you vote for me, you vote for experience, you vote for somebody who knows the circuit, not somebody that's really brand new to the circuit and has to figure all that out. And I would appreciate everyone's vote on November 6th.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ben Shealy. Now, you will be tomorrow night at Uptown Greenwood at the Little Theater.
Yes, ma'am.
That's right. You're going to have a forum there. They're also having one tonight. Yes, coming up in about 15 minutes, I do believe. It starts at 5:30. They will be talking to the state office people. And tomorrow night, it is you and your opponent will be there on the stage. So I certainly hope everybody comes out, ask questions, be informed. You know my philosophy. I want everybody to know everything. So when you make that decision, you don't have to vote straight party. You can vote for the person. And I really think that's important. How about you, Ben?
I think that's very important to get your knowledge and get to understanding and to get a grasp, because, quite honestly, this is not a popularity contest. If we're going to serve the community, we got to seek those people that know the job and know how to do it best.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for coming out today. This is WCRS, and I do want to say this. There is a forum Uptown Greenwood this evening. I have not seen a lot of advertising about it. I think there should be more. So if you are listening to this broadcast and you'd like to know more about our candidates, please head Uptown Greenwood to the community theater. Be part of that. Starts at 5:30. I think it goes to 6:30, maybe 7 o'clock. It'll be time well spent. Thanks so much for listening today. I am Ann Eller right here on WCRS, right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.